I think I can help him move past that. Do you think I could talk to him? Ask him if he might talk to us? No, I don't. Kira steeled herself for another barrage of angry complaints. Tom was going to kill her. But then, Ray appeared on the screen. Kira was momentarily lost for words.
I'm decrepit, but I'm not dead, he told Kira with a smile that lit up his startling blue eyes.
He was surprised how warm she felt towards him immediately. Had he been listening to the whole conversation?
The drink took its toll, but I can make my own decisions, he said seriously. I just don't like to advertise that fact in front of my son. He can be very...
he searched for the word.
Overprotective.
Ray, you look well, Kira said, hardly able to keep the surprise and excitement out of her voice.
A lot better than the last time you saw me, I'll bet. I could have gone either way, but I decided to get help. Dry out. I've been sober for over 10 years. I stopped drinking because, after I saw what happened to that poor woman, I realised how precious life was. I couldn't turn back the clock. I couldn't undo all the damage I'd done through alcohol. My poor son had been through enough.
She watched as he turned his wedding ring round on his finger.
But I decided I could change. It wasn't easy, of course. The chem addict treatment was rough, but effective. I guess it's all a matter of how much you want it.
I guess it must be, Kira said.
I must admit, it's shaken me up seeing the news, brought it all back.
He moved his lower jaw up and down, his lips closed as if chewing.
After the woman at the garage, I didn't want to go on.
He paused.
I wish I could go back and try harder to save her. I told the police more. I don't think many people think about what it must be like to be a witness to a crime. Do you?
I suppose many people don't. No.
Poor Molly, seeing her mother taken. It stays with you. I still have flashbacks, sort of. Only the vaguest images. Nothing that could help to solve it. I often think, if I could go back, I would do this or that. But then the realisation is that it is what it is, and I can't do anything. I'll have to live with the fact that I saw such terrible things, and there's nothing I can do to change it.
His voice broke.
That poor girl. I often think about her.
She studied the craggy face.
But you say I might be able to help somehow.
Kira felt a growing excitement.
Please, yes. I've developed a technology that allows us to access memories straight from the brain. It's painless, accurate, and might help to find out exactly what you saw that night.
Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Alex's gaze locked in her direction. She kept her focus on the screen.
Well, I didn't expect to hear that,
Ray smiled, bemused.
You're the only witness that we have, and I think, deep down, somewhere in that brain of yours, there is a memory, a clue, that's going to help us to get to the truth of the matter.
She watched as he mulled this over for a moment. Then he reached into his pocket, pulled out an old photograph, and held it up to the screen. Kira studied the image of the young woman in her wedding dress, holding a small posy of hydrangeas, her red curly hair covered in a veil of gypsophilia, a brilliant smile.
My beautiful girl, Annette. She was the only woman for me, he said, turning the photograph back and gazing at the image. I was lost without her, totally lost for a while.
He looked up.
She would be disappointed in me if I didn't try to help.
Ray, I can't begin to thank you, said Kira,
but he shook his head.
No, I should be thanking you. I feel like a man who's had a second chance. If there is something I can do to get that information out,
he closed his eyes tight for a moment,
then I will do it.
Ray, I'm going to be honest with you. This isn't going to be easy, Kira said. We'll have to revisit a very difficult experience that you have had. It will be traumatic. I can't promise that this technology won't have its effects. We'll have to look at those memories. What sort of phantoms and physical symptoms might she have to deal with after she'd been in Ray's mind? Whatever it takes, Ray said. Kira took courage from the old man. Yes, she agreed. Whatever it takes. After they arranged a meeting, the screen went black and Alex stood looking at Kira. So, are you going to explain that to me? She asked, her arms crossed. Kira took a deep breath. She could trust Alex, couldn't she? She would have to now. She no longer had Jimmy's support. She couldn't do this on her own. We've got until tomorrow midnight, judging by the pattern, to save Isabel. We have no witnesses and no leads. Neither the pub nor the hospital has anything we can work with. The house search has turned up nothing so far. Head injury man was really our last option, and there seems to be no one else coming forward. Head injury came into the station late last night, Alex said, but her expression was one of disappointment. Saw news reports and realised it was him. Came in with his dad and his dad's lawyer. He was terrified we were going to think he was Lomax's accomplice. A rush of dizziness overwhelmed her. Who was he? Anyone to worry about? Did he tell you anything useful? No, not really. Matthew Holsall, a second-year university student, doesn't recall anything. His flatmate came to look for him when he hadn't returned home an hour after calling to say he was on his way with their tea from the takeaway. He said he found him half a mile away from the Farmer's Arms, slumped against a wall. But no one called an ambulance. Doesn't look like it. Alex bit her lip and said, going back to Ray, his testimony was confused and inaccurate at best. We were looking for information about Jennifer Bosanquet, who had been abducted on the 8th of February, but Ray was convinced he'd seen the woman on the 1st of February, so it didn't make sense what he was saying. Surely Ray Clark can't tell us anything. No, that's the point. He can't tell us anything, agreed Kira. But we can find out if we go into his memories. She wasn't surprised. Alex looked confused. I've been developing a new technology designed to read memories from the brain directly. Recently, it has become obvious that this would be highly valuable in police investigations. But how can we access those memories if he can't? The human brain can see and remember things even if the person is not conscious of what they've seen. Trauma, in particular, can mess up the memory to the extent that we can start to imagine things we saw, making stuff up, if you like. We are hardwired for narrative. Alex's expression changed into one of disbelief, but she pressed on. The human brain needs to see a pattern, a story, so it tries to explain what it saw, even if what it saw was disjointed, incomplete. It puts ideas together to try to make logic of things that are often illogical. On the other hand, instead of adding things that aren't there, the brain also filters things out. But those things that were seen and logged by the brain are still there in the memory. We just have to access them. People see and remember things, even though they don't know they've remembered those things. Yes, and we can see what they saw, see what they've forgotten they saw. We can access Ray Clark's memories and get a more accurate picture. It might give us some more leads. You know, of course, that this won't be admissible in court. He'll be no more a useful witness to us in court than he was 15 years ago. We won't need him to be a credible witness in court, Kira replied. It's intelligence, not evidence. No more than a secret informant. Ray can't tell us, even if he wanted to. He's lost the pathway to that memory. But this technology, it could get us right into those memories. We'd be able to see what he saw. 16 years since the first victims died, and where the hell are we? This could help us solve this case and get him once and for all. You never know, you might get a promotion off the back of it. Alex's eyes were wide. The corners of her mouth turned up. And you'll find out for sure who killed your sister, Alex replied. They were locked in a conspiracy now. There was no way they could tell Tom. He would be furious they'd gone against his orders. Ray is more than willing to go through with the procedure, Kira added. It's not only about a face, seeing who did the crime. It's about the other things, the details that will lead to the criminal. There are things in Ray's mind that will have remained untouched for 15 years. Alex said excitedly, It's the perfect crime scene. Chapter 28. Tuesday, 6th of February, 2035. 4:37 p.m. Kira hated the expression, time is a great healer. It was never any easier, Emma's anniversary. It was just different. Different because Molly was so grown up now, because her own father was no longer there, because she herself was getting older. Nothing seemed healed at all, only more fragmented. Cremation was compulsory, although particularly religious and wealthy Londoners would have their loved ones' remains shipped out overseas, mainly Jerusalem and Mecca, if they wanted a burial. Land was too precious and too expensive here now, and the government had ended the protests against interments only for those who could afford it with a blanket ban. Kira liked the minimalism of the necroplex, the columns of small, shiny, grey-engraved boxes that lined the white walls, four rows high, gave a calm, pleasing symmetry. There was room for a small candle and a posy of flowers next to each plot. Delicate strands of light from the abstract stained glass windows hit the white in spots of colour, echoing the flowers of the orangery through the glass doors at the far end of the hall. The orangery was a beautiful verdant garden replete with images of the deceased, memorial benches, water features and in memoriam plants. Families passed each other in quiet sadness with brief, empathetic nods. Kira watched her mother borrow secateurs from a basket by the door, make her way to Emma's rosebush and clip a few curling leaves. Molly reached out and touched the photograph of her mother next to her plot. Emma, eternally youthful, that heartbreaking smile, the dimples. Kira couldn't help but smile back, albeit briefly. Molly leaned her head onto her aunt's shoulder. Kira remembered the promises she had made at Emma's funeral to do everything she could to protect Molly, to nurture her and steer her onto a stable grounding. She wasn't sure how successful she had been so far. I know I don't really remember having her around, but I miss her, said Molly. Does that sound weird? Not at all. After a few moments, Molly lifted her head and asked, Why did you argue with Mum last time you saw her? What did you row about? Kira had never made a secret of the fact that her mother had left the cafe angry after they had had words, dragging Molly with her. She had played it down, of course, but her niece had always known. Kira had always avoided answering this question, honestly, brushing it off, saying it had been trivial. Molly's golden eyes locked onto hers. Kira shrugged. Nothing important. Something stupid. I can't remember. Please tell me. I know there's more to it than that. You can tell me now I'm an adult. How could she tell her niece that the argument with her mother had been about the most important thing in the world, about Molly herself? Kira was distracted by a man who came in through the orangery door and stood there motionless for a moment. He was too far away for her to be able to see his face and the hood of his jacket pulled up. There was something odd about him, out of place. Tell me, insisted Molly. She wasn't going to let it go. Kira would have to give her something to satisfy her curiosity. We'd been sitting in the cafe for over an hour, Kira began. It was not long after your third birthday. You kept looking for your mum out of the cafe window and asking for her. You drew shapes on the misty glass. Kira remembered how furious she had been. They'd been there for nearly an hour. She'd had more important things to do than sit around waiting for Emma to show up whenever. She had a proper job to get on with,
not some ridiculous eco-mission with a bunch of misfits.
Why was Mum late?
She'd been on an eco-protest, a high-profile one. The man with the hooded jacket began to walk slowly up the hall. He stopped at one of the memorial plaques and reached out to touch a flower in the nearby vase. There was something oddly stilted about the way he moved.
You were playing teacups with your dolly.
She remembered Molly with a cake-smeared face, kneeling up on the chair, chattering away to herself, rearranging the cups and spoons, pouring her doll a pretend cup of tea, smiling up at a man who walked past her and patted her head as her mother arrived.
You've always loved cake.
Molly smiled, but sadness washed over Kira. She had been angry with Emma, and when she finally arrived, she had let it get the better of her.
If you think going on eco-protests with people with stupid nicknames like Mick Tree and River Girl is more important than spending time with your daughter... Oh, by the way, living in the shithole is affecting Molly's health. She's been coughing all day and... Have you been drinking alcohol? You smell like...
Your mum was a bit late meeting us. She was never much good at timekeeping. She was late because... The man moved slowly closer along the hall. He seemed to be going to each of the memorials. What was he looking for? He stood next to a couple who were comforting each other, disturbing their grief. They looked over at him, confused, until he moved away.
What was she talking about the last time you saw her?
I only had one or two beers on the train on the way back. I know how to look after my kid. I didn't take her on the protest, did I? I thought you two would enjoy spending time together. Do you know how hard it is to be a single parent and be on duty all the time? Never having any fun? Give me a break. You've no idea what it's like to be a parent.
Oh, right, because I don't have kids, I don't understand.
At least I didn't leave Moles with the other squatters. At least I left her with someone I could trust.
Don't worry, Molly. Mummy and Auntie Kira are just chatting.
When are you going to grow up and take some responsibility?
At least I'm fighting for a decent world for my kid to grow up in.
You. Always you. You were the centre of her world. Kira bit her lip. She remembered many of the customers had observed the debacle, and the man who had patted Molly had shot the two sisters a glance moments before he'd left the cafe, his expression disappointed. And Kira's final parting shot.
You shouldn't have gotten pregnant so young. Are you even sober enough to look after that child? You're a terrible mother.
How could she tell Molly any of this? She had always tried so hard to protect Emma's memory, but also she didn't want to show her niece what a terrible person she herself was, how irritable, stubborn, judgmental. So different from the usual memories she told Molly about, when she would put Emma to bed and stroke her hair until she fell asleep. She watched the biggest regret, the biggest sorrow of her life, unfold on the screen of her mind's eye. Emma standing up, knocking the table, crockery clattering, Kira's body glued with stubbornness and resentment to the rickety wooden chair beneath her. Emma wrestling with her bag strap as it caught over the backrest. Molly's pet lip as she was torn away from her cake and her cups of pretend tea. Her last vision of her beloved Emma had been her hand holding Molly's much smaller one, disappearing out of the cafe door, back out into the cold night air. And then, worse still, the thing she wished more than anything that she could change. She had sat there, at the table, stirring her cold coffee, feeling anger and resentment, until she had suddenly come to her senses and rushed out of the door, the word sorry on her lips. But Emma and Molly had disappeared. Kira had run to the nearest corner and found Molly standing alone in a side street, crying on the pavement, and at the far end of the tarmac, hardly visible, the tail lights of a car. A little chubby hand pointing, a tear-stained face.
Mummy in car.
Kira never saw Emma alive again. She came back from her memories, Molly's eyes urging her.
Go on, Key.
Was she saying nice things about me? The man had come closer to them, was only a few meters away now. He stood looking at one of the memorials, hands in his pockets. Kira could only see the side of his hood from here. He was probably someone in grief. Was that why his behaviour seemed somehow strange? Bereavement affected people differently. He didn't look particularly big or threatening, but the bees begin to buzz again in her chest hive, tiny stings all along her nerves. Molly, on the other hand, didn't seem to notice him, too interested in the information she was trying to glean. Was he just another mourner? Or another phantom? Or was he more sinister than that? Had the MOD been following her after all? Were they a threat to her family? Hadn't she promised Emma so many times in this very place that she would protect Molly?
You okay, Key?
Molly asked, following her eyeline.
Yes, fine,
she smiled, putting her hand around her niece's shoulder. She looked back to see where the man was. He reached over to a candle and snuffed it out between his finger and thumb. The hairs on her neck stood up.
Come on, let's go and find your nan. But Key, you were telling me about...
I'll tell you more later. There was a brief resistance in Molly, and then she gave in. Kira ignored her insistence to continue the story and turned to see the man step forward and run his finger down the photograph of Emma. She felt a rush of nausea and hurried to the orangery door, leaving the man looming next to her sister's remains. 6:32 p.m. When they got home, the three women followed the annual memorial ritual of settling down on the sofa in front of the screen to watch an old film, one of the classics that Emma had loved. Molly had chosen The Breakfast Club. By the time the bottle of wine was half empty, the takeaway had been delivered and dished out. Even though Kira had only drunk one glass, the alcohol took the edge off her nerves. She would have to leave eventually to meet Ray at the lab, as they had agreed. She wouldn't be too long. Then she would come back here and finish the wine. It was comforting to be at her mum's, away from all the stress of the investigation. After she had eaten, she lay across the armchair, legs over one arm, watching the screen. She tried to fight it, but weariness overcame her, and she began drifting off. Her eyelids became heavy, her breath slowed. Even with her eyes closed, she could hear the dialogue from the screen and feel the presence of the two women she loved the most in the world nearby. She briefly jolted awake and saw her mother and niece leaning against each other on the sofa, engrossed in the film. She needed to stay awake, but the exhaustion, wine and cosiness were too strong a cocktail. Sometime later, Kira slowly opened her eyes. The film was still on, and at first, she could not see clearly, her vision blurry with sleep. Was that Molly leaning over her? She rubbed her face. What's wrong? But as her sight cleared, her mind could not begin to take in what was in front of her. Emma, her face white-grey, her eyes staring, the duct tape pulled down but still covering her mouth, naked except for her lower half covered in black plastic, and where her heart should have been, there was a gaping, glistening wound. Kira jumped up, clawing her way backwards over the armchair, startling her mum and niece.
Jesus, no,
she cried, as her sister's dead eyes followed her every move.
What is it, love?
Asked her mother, standing up, alarmed.
Can't you see?
Kira cried out, horrified, clambering off the chair and grabbing onto her mother, pointing to where the ghostly figure stood.
See what, Kira?
Molly drew back, hugging herself in fear on the sofa like a little girl. Emma stood silent, a harrowing spectre. She slowly lifted her arm, and at the end of her wrist, A bloody stump pointed towards Molly, a bone shard jutting out like a misplaced finger.
"Mum! Mum!"
cried Kira, unable to tear her eyes away from her sister. And then Emma was gone. Kira collapsed onto the sofa, her heart thumping against her ribcage, cold sweat on her brow. What had it meant? A warning? A judgment?
"Key, what just happened?"
Molly asked, her voice trembling. When she saw her niece's face, Kira tried to pull herself together, be strong like she always had been for these women.
"Molly, get my inhaler in my bag."
Kira knew why it was happening, and although she kept telling herself that was all in her imagination, she felt a deep sense of unease. It was the first vision that she had seen when others had been present. Was she losing control over the phantoms? Did this mean she was going to have to live with these things? Should she ring Jimmy? No, she was on her own with this. Molly hurried into the hall and brought her bag in. Kira dumped the contents on the sofa, found the inhaler and pumped the canister into her mouth. She waited until her breathing had calmed. Her niece and mother stood watching, panicked.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had a waking dream. That's all."
"What did you see, Key? What was it?" Molly asked, still distressed.
"Did you think there was someone in the room with us?"
"We've been doing experiments at the lab, and it spooked me. That's all. I'm fine. I woke up in the middle of a dream." Her breathing was becoming much less laboured now. Her buzzing nerves had begun to settle.
"I'm sorry I scared you. It was..."
She shook her head, unable to explain further.
"What sort of experiments are you doing that could freak you out like that?"
Molly asked with tears in her eyes. She had to give them some explanation, didn't she? They were both gawping at her, bewildered. She was too exhausted to deceive them.
"I was with the family of a murder victim yesterday. My friend Tom had to tell them we'd found her body, that she wasn't coming home. She had a little boy. He reminded me so much of you when you were little and we lost your mum."
It all came tumbling out.
"Why were you visiting the family of a murder victim?" her mum asked anxiously, and then her voice hardened. "Is that Tom Morgan? What on earth are you in touch with him for?"
"He asked me to do some consultancy work on a case. I'm sorry, Mum, I should have told you."
"Yes, you should have told me. I thought all that was over a long time ago."
Kira ignored this and said, "There's been a bit of confusion over just exactly who is responsible for the death of..." She suddenly didn't know how to finish the sentence. Should she say the Mizpah murder victims, or should she say Emma's name? She couldn't bear to see her mother's face, so she left the sentence unfinished.
"The police think that he might have had an accomplice."
She couldn't tell them her own theory, that Lomax hadn't done it, and the real killer had been out and about for the last 14 years, while Lomax paid the price.
"They want me to help, using my technology, to look into certain people's memories, to see who might have killed the victim, clarify what exactly is going on." She hated lying to her mum.
"It's the Mizpah murderers you're working on, isn't it?" Her mother drew away from her, leaving Kira unmoored.
"You're working on Emma's case, and you said nothing."
"Mum, I..." She closed her mouth again. There was nothing she could say to make the situation any better.
"And it's making you see things that aren't there," her mother said, horrified.
Why hadn't she kept her mouth shut? God only knows what her mother would have said if she knew exactly who Kira had seen. Molly was sitting still, face aghast.
"Molls, I'm so sorry if I gave you a scare. It was a waking dream, nothing to be worried about." "You can look into memories to see who killed someone," Molly said slowly, her face white.
"Yes, but don't worry, it isn't dangerous," Kira tried to reassure her.
"These are only side effects, but..."
Molly's face grew crimson. She jumped up and screamed at her aunt.
And you didn't think to use this technology to find out who took my mum for certain? I've seen the news. I know there's doubt about who the real killer is.
Her words were like a smack in Kira's face.
No, Molls. I don't mean... You had some way of finding out who killed my mum and you didn't do it,
she shouted. The question knocked the breath out of Kira. It took a few seconds to gather herself.
No, Molly, it's not like that, insisted Kira. There weren't any witnesses to your mum's abduction, so I couldn't... Yes, there is,
Molly screamed.
Me? I witnessed it. I saw it.
Kira stood and squared up to her niece.
It's not like that. You'd have to see it all over again, relive it. I'd have to relive it. I want to if it means I can find out who killed my mum.
You were no more than a baby. I can't let you go through that again. Molly took a step towards her, jabbing a finger towards Kira.
Do you know what it's like, always wondering who ruined my life? Who took my lovely mum away from me?
She was screaming in Kira's face now.
There's some asshole out there living their life, laughing, having fun, even having kids of their own while my mum's in a fucking box.
You were only a toddler, Kira snarled. What the hell could you have remembered? I don't know if your brain would even have been able to understand what you saw. Why was she being so angry? Why couldn't she take her niece in her arms and hold her and tell her that they would use Cassandra, that they would find out who took Emma from them? Because it would mean that she would have to see her sister abducted. That she would have to accept that if they hadn't argued that night, Molly would still have a mother. Is that why the idea of using the tech like that had never even occurred to her? Had she deliberately blocked the idea from her brain because she couldn't face it?
I'm an adult now, Molly yelled. You should let me make that decision. I can't make fucking decisions. Do you know what it's been like for me without her? Knowing I saw someone take her but not being able to get it out? All those nightmares I had about Mum being dragged away in a red car. Do you know how much guilt I feel?
You haven't got the right to feel any guilt, Kira yelled, thinking of her own part in Emma's death.
I saw the killer and I can't remember.
Molly's face was wet with tears, her nose streaming, her cheeks red.
I must know something, anything, that could lead us to catch the bastard who did this to Mum, to me, to my life.
She threw herself on the sofa and sobbed.
Stop it, Kira shouted angrily, yanking Molly up. Stop being so dramatic. You don't even know the damage you will do to yourself if you see those traumatic memories as an adult. Think about how your behaviour is affecting your nan, you selfish little cow.
Molly pulled away from Kira and huddled onto the sofa, weeping. Her mother, who had stood by stunned, grabbed Kira by the shoulders.
Kira, what has gotten into you? Why are you being like this? Why are you talking to Molly like that?
Even her mother's desperation did nothing to quell Kira's rage. Some part of Kira knew that this behaviour didn't belong to her, that it had seeped into her from Lomax during the transference.
What are you doing to Molly? Don't you want to find who killed your sister? You owe it to me. If you can do this, then I need to know. Don't you think it would be better to go through those memories than live with not knowing? No!
Kira shrieked. She needed to get away. She scraped all her belongings up from where she had dumped them on the sofa and threw everything back into her bag. She went into the hall and grabbed her shoes and her coat in a daze. Her mother came out after her.
Where are you going? I thought you were staying here tonight.
But Kira had opened the front door and was sitting on the front step, putting her shoes on. A fine misty rain covered her face like a veil. Her heart was thundering in her chest. She had already lost her sister. She didn't want to lose Molly too. But Lomax's violence and anger, like a virus, had invaded her system and was changing her beyond recognition, beyond her control.
Kira!
Her mother pleaded, but she ignored her, stood up and moved to the car. Molly came out into the hall. When she saw her, Kira put her hand on the car door handle. "I've got another witness. I'm going to see him tonight. I'm going to find whoever killed your mum, Molly. I swear to you."
"If it wasn't for you rowing with her," Molly screamed back, "I'd still have a mum."
And she slammed the door, leaving Kira in the street, in the rain. Chapter 29. Tuesday, 6th of February, 2035. 8:08 p.m. It was the first time that Kira had done a transference without Jimmy. She had given Ray the injection of the transmitters, even though her hands had been trembling. What if she messed this up? It was the last chance she had to find anything that would solve this case and find Isabel Marsden alive. There was no going back now. She focused her mind on Isabel, alone and frightened, and pushed any thoughts of the argument she had had with her mum and Molly so that she could focus on the task in hand. She was doing this for them too, wasn't she? Ray lay on the bed, looking small and vulnerable, like a child in the dentist chair for the first time. Marcus stood on the other side of the glass, reluctant and protective. Cosmo's screen flashed up the security camera image from the front door. It showed Alex's face. Kira sighed, relieved. At least she wasn't on her own now. She pushed the door release and Alex hurried into the building, making sure the door was closed tightly behind her. "I'm sorry I'm late," she breathed. "I couldn't get away from the hub." She put a hand up to Marcus and Ray, who nodded in reply. Kira saw her marvelling at the kit, confusion and admiration on her face. "I haven't missed anything." "Will you wait with Marcus on the other side of the glass, Alex?" Alex's eyebrows twitched. "Keep him out there," Kira whispered. "No one can stop the process once it's started. It's not safe." Alex nodded and left. Kira leaned over to Ray. "Just you and me now. Half an hour and this will all be over. We'll be having a cup of tea and we'll all feel a lot better," she said with a wink, swallowing her fear about the phantoms she might pick up. What would she have to face after this? "Don't worry, settle back and relax. I want you to think about the night you saw... whatever you saw. Don't force it. Imagine yourself back there and I'll do the rest, okay?" Ray gave her the thumbs up. She smiled, but her stomach was churning. Kira took a few deep breaths. "You're going into a memory, a crime scene. That's all. You've been to plenty of crime scenes. You can do this." Ray was facing slightly towards her, his eyes closed, deep in his sockets, his jaw starting to slacken, his breathing steady. She nearly jumped out of her skin as his eyes flicked open and he grabbed her hand with his own gnarly one. He was surprisingly strong. "Thank you for doing this for me." His voice was clear and earnest. "I can't do this on my own. I've had my problems, but I know I saw something that will help." She believed him. "Cosmo, prepare for transference. Dim lights, 20%, she commanded. There was a shift in atmosphere as the lights gradually faded and the bed on which Ray lay moved into Cassandra's centre smoothly. Alex and Marcus stood in the shadows, but she could feel their gaze. Kira's heart was beating fast. She settled back into her recliner and braced herself, trying to keep her breathing calm. It was difficult to prepare a blank canvas of her mind for what was to come. Random thoughts and ideas popped up thick and fast, but she kept parrying. Her nerves and excitement settled a little as her determination took over and she let herself grow heavy. There was darkness and perfume, sweet and strong. Then a blur of blue, the colour of hydrangeas in her mother's garden. She could hear a buzzing sound, the overlapping of two voices. She tried to tune in, to make sense of the words. Then she could see Ray's memories as the visuals kicked in. A bride walking down the aisle, coming closer, not smoothly and step by step, but instead in staggered movements. 10 meters away, suddenly 5 meters, then right next to him. Red hair, her smile reaching her eyes. One hand held a bouquet of blue flowers, the other hand reached out, and a ring was placed on her finger. Everything went black, and then there was an overwhelming smell, wetness and dust, alcohol and filth, all filtering through her brain. It was dark at first, like awakening early on a December morning. The odour of oil and petrol came through strongly, so different from the clean fuels they use now. The rain pounded down on a metal roof above her head, the sound vibrating through her brain. She saw through Ray's eyes as he lay on the ground of what seemed to be an old shed or garage. A streak of yellow light cut into the darkness and highlighted a newspaper near her, his, head. She could see the headline, "Politicians Assault," and she remembered that had been the news on the 1st of February 2020. However, the newspaper was already dog-eared and dirty. Is this where the confusion lay? That Ray had said it was the 1st of February just because of a week-old newspaper? Had that been why the police had discounted his testimony? There was a torch nearby. She tried to reach out for it, but found her hand paralysed, and then reminded herself she was only an observer. From the darkness, she heard muffled voices coming from outside, the banging of one of the large old wooden doors in the wind. A man shouted, "I've paid you for sex. I own you now." Then a scream. Ray sat up, a misty vapour escaping from his lips in the cold air. Upright, Kira's head swam with the effects of alcohol. An acidic gurgling in her stomach told her Ray hadn't eaten in some time, and he had drunk something much stronger than she was used to. A woozy warmth travelled through her veins, moving up towards her head. She was desperately willing him to move, turn on the torch, do anything, so she could get a look at what was going on. She shifted her body in the recliner in the lab, her muscles tense as she strained against the confines of Ray's consciousness, but then she crumpled, frustrated. Behind that weather-beaten wooden door was the man who had killed again and again, and who was going to kill very soon, the man who had Isabel Marsden held captive in real time. The surge of intoxication in her bloodstream reached her brain just as Ray put his head to the floor. There was a delay of 2 or 3 minutes before a shrill scream followed by what sounded like a woman crying and begging. Ray looked up again, vision heavy and blurred. Then the screaming again. Kira's body was rocking in fear and frustration in the recliner, but she could still feel the cold concrete beneath her. The noises stopped. She watched as Ray's hands scratched along the grimy floor of the garage, nails filthy and ragged, as he crawled closer to the door. He peered out from the cracks and gaps below the rotted wood. From this angle, Kira could see a car to her left, and ahead, across a courtyard, another row of garages with wooden doors. The car was red, as Ray had said in the interview, although the only light was coming from a weak, yellowy wall lamp on the last garage in the row, so the exact shade of red was uncertain. If she could only get a look at the number plate. Was that the piece of information that Ray had? Was she about to get this bastard? She thrilled at the idea of it, even with the overwhelming inebriation coming from Ray, which threatened to dull her brain and her excitement. She willed him, "Go on, go on, get a look at the plate." As if he had heard her, Ray moved forward, shuffling along the ground, and pushed the door open slightly. Kira held her breath, ready to remember the numbers and letters. But at that moment, the door to the garage opposite flew open and banged against a wall. Her vision, Ray's vision, immediately transferred from the car to a small woman dressed in white. She was stumbling barefoot, disoriented, wailing in fear. Kira immediately recognized her. It was Jennifer Bosanquet. Ray had been telling the truth after all. He had seen one of the victims of the Mizpah murderer. A shout startled her.
Get away! Get away!
It was another woman's voice. Ray peered into the darkness, but Kira could see nothing. Jennifer appeared too frightened to flee, unable somehow. Drugged? She crumpled on the ground behind the car, cowering. She was so close now that Kira could hear her whimper in fear. She had to remind herself that Jennifer was dead already. This was in the past, untouchable. But her blood was itching. The bees in her throat stinging as she screamed in her mind, "Run! Run! Run!" All her instincts were urging her to burst out of the door and save the poor girl. But there was nothing that could be done for her now. Moments later, a man stumbled out of the garage and made his way to the back of the car. She could see he had dark hair, but couldn't make out any of his features in the poor light. He pulled Jennifer roughly up by her arms. She pleaded,
"I'm Jenny, please, I'm Jenny,"
over and over as she struggled feebly against him. He grabbed her around the throat and hit her once, really hard, and she mewled, a heart-wrenching sound. As he let her go, Kira saw a glint, as though a silver moth had fluttered to the ground. The man stood still for a moment, catching his breath, and then opened the car boot. He knelt down and gently took the woman in his arms and lifted her. "Don't worry, Elise. I'll be back for you very soon. I need to keep you safe in here for a while. You won't be alone anymore." "Elise?" She groaned as he put her in the boot, as carefully as a mother putting a child down to sleep in a cot, and closed the lid softly, as if not to wake her. He leaned against the car for a moment, exhausted, but then regained himself and stood up straight, shoulders squared. He faced the garage opposite.
"Right, you fucking bitch! I'm coming for you," he yelled into the darkness, and terror gripped Kira as if he knew she was watching.
Her body stiffened in fear, but he moved away into the opposite direction. For a moment she could see nothing as Ray put his forehead against the rough, cold, stony floor. Then he pushed the door open a fraction and peered out. From this perspective, Kira could see that it was a red Ford Focus. She couldn't see the plate, only that rust had eaten away at the bottom of the car. Ray's adrenaline flooded Kira's blood as something banged loudly against the wooden door in front of him, and a half brick came rolling over and stopped. She heard a dull metallic thud as another brick hit the car, and then the sound of the hooded man crying out. A woman ran out from the garage and flung the door shut with a bang that reverberated around the yard. She hurried towards the rusted car.
"Jenny! Jenny!" she shouted desperately.
The woman had dark skin and long black wavy hair. Her black and white striped dress was ripped down the back and hung off one of her shoulders. Her mascara had run, giving her dark panda eyes. Blood dripped from one of her arms in a steady stream, and part of her torn dress was wrapped around her hand. She scrambled around the car, slipping on stones, calling, "Jenny! Jenny!" But then the garage door flew open again, and the man staggered out, a hand to his head, and screamed,
"Fucking bitch!"
The woman ran off into the darkness. A split second later, he was in pursuit. Kira lay back on the recliner in the lab, drained, despondent. She had not been able to see the abductor's face, nor the registration. Ray's eyes, poorly sighted and fuzzy with alcohol, only captured the letter B. Or was it an R? And who was Elise? However, once the man had gone, Ray grabbed his torch and tentatively clambered up and made his way into the yard. Her body, Ray's body, tensed as he heard a noise coming from a nearby clump of bushes. Kira felt a rush of expectancy, but it was only a fox, its eyes flashing as they reflected the beam from the torch. She could see the swirls of light as Ray moved around, the concrete floor, Blood spots against the grey, rubble and bricks strewn across the ground in the tight circle of white light. There was no sign of the other woman. Ray began to shuffle back to his usual sleeping place, but stopped when his eyes caught something lying on the ground and he bent down to pick it up. A train rushed by, whipping up the nearby trees with a crashing sound, and then everything went quiet again as the wind died. The garage went dark briefly, as though the torch had failed. Kira became acutely aware of Ray snoring gently at her side, and she tried desperately to tune back into him. For the briefest of moments, before it disappeared for good, Kira saw Ray's grubby palm and on it a broken chain with a silver pendant. Half a heart shape, cut with a zigzag. A mitzvah pendant. And then, all she could hear was a loud screeching noise that went on and on as white lights ripped through her eyes and she thought her skull would be cracked apart. Chapter 30. Tuesday, 6th of February, 8:44 p.m. Kira came out of the transference gasping for breath, her head spinning, her heart pounding. She felt like Dorothy, who had been deposited in Oz by the Twister, everything suddenly in bright technicolour, startling and overwhelming. All around her there were screeching noises, flashing lights and images of faces. Molly, her dad, Lomax and Kaylee Carmichael swirling in her vision. Right in front of her stood Tom, the headset in his hand. Behind him, Jimmy, his face pale. "What the hell are you doing?" Tom asked. Kira vomited violently and it splattered on the floor at his feet, covering Tom's shoes. His eyes narrowed and he clenched his jaw. The room was still spinning, her ears filled with white noise. Another surge of nausea overcame her. She put her hand to her mouth. When she was able to speak again, she pointed at the headset and muttered, "What the fuck, Tom?" "What are you doing here?" Tom indicated Ray, who was snoring gently, slack-mouthed, peaceful as though unburdened. Maybe Jimmy was right, and more than just memories had been transferred. There was accusation in Tom's eyes. Marcus, obviously agitated by the intrusion, watched from the other side of the glass wall. Alex held him back. Emma immediately appeared, standing next to Alex and Marcus, her face grey, her milky pupil staring blindly at Kira above the tight silver duct tape. She held her arms up as if to put her hands on the wall. Instead, her bleeding stumps streaked the glass.
"Jimmy, what the hell are you doing letting him take me out of a transference like that? Do you know the damage he could have done?"
Her stomach roiled again and she swallowed hard. Emma appeared on this side of the wall and then took a few steps closer towards her. Splashes of blood marked her trajectory across the lab floor.
"How did you know I was here?"
Kira glared at Alex, feeling betrayed.
"You backstabber. I thought you were on my side. You said you wanted to help me find my sister's killer when all the time you were spying on me for Tom."
"Kira, it's not like that." Her voice was muffled by the glass between them.
"Save it."
Was there no one Kira could trust? She wanted to get away from them all. She tried to get up from the recliner, her legs new lamb weak, her head heavy as though she was still under alcoholic influence. Despair started to build up in her, the weepy self-pity of a drunk. This was coming from Ray, not her. Jimmy pushed her down gently. "Lie back, I need to check you over." As she complied, Emma loomed closer. Kira tried to look away, but the familiar smell of her sister's perfume wafted over her, and with it came a cloud of memories that rendered her momentarily mute. Jimmy snapped at Tom. "You shouldn't have done that. It's dangerous to take someone out of a transference." Tom ignored him and ordered Marcus to come and collect his father. Still feeling the effects of the alcohol Ray had drunk, Kira rubbed her hand briskly over her face and noticed there was a ring on the third finger of her left hand. She examined the plain gold band. What had she seen in his memory again? She closed her eyes for a few minutes and listened to Marcus's gentle reassurances as Ray took his time to come around and Jimmy helped Marcus to take his father into the foyer to recover. When Kira raised her head again, she saw Emma standing right next to Tom. She looked back at her hand and the wedding ring had disappeared. Her sister was still there, but Tom seemed to have no awareness of her.
"Alex, get in here," Tom bellowed.
Reluctantly, Alex pushed open the glass door and stood in front of Tom.
"Alex, what the hell are you doing? What were you thinking?" Tom asked.
"I'm sorry, sir. Damage limitation. I thought Kira was going to cause embarrassment and get herself into trouble." Her eyes were downcast. "No wonder she won't look at me."
"And you didn't think to tell me?" Tom barked.
Alex hadn't told him after all. But Kira knew that the ambition Alex had displayed when trying to find the real killer was going to work against her now. Alex wasn't going to risk her job. She would probably tell Tom everything, wouldn't she, to keep on the right side of the boss.
"I was going to, sir, but the opportunity hadn't arisen." "Go home. See me in my office at 8 tomorrow morning."
So how had Tom known? Kira couldn't focus her eyes on anything. Was it a hangover or a migraine? But she knew Emma was still nearby, that overpowering perfume. Jimmy came back into the lab.
"Marcus has taken Ray home."
Tom shook his head. "I'll have to go and see them about this tomorrow." He scratched his chin. "This is an absolute mess, Kira. I can't believe you've done this."
"How did you get in?" Jimmy asked her.
"I took my keys back when we did the transfer with Lomax."
Jimmy shook his head. "Jesus, if Carter finds out, what the hell are you playing at? He'll take legal action. God knows what the MOD would do if they knew. I warned you about the side effects."
"You don't get it," she groaned.
"What have you done to yourself?"
He tried to look into her eyes with the transilluminator, but she pushed him away angrily.
"You're going to kill yourself if you go on like this,"